Who doesn't love waving around one of those giant foam hands signaling we're number one? Well, it's not so much fun if you're the state of Indiana and the contest in question involves health. We have the dubious distinction of ranking among the nation's top 10 states for smoking, physical inactivity, air pollution, unvaccinated children, cancer deaths, infant mortality, and preventable hospitalizations. Need some good news? Indiana has the 7th lowest incidence of salmonella. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll focus on legislative efforts to improve Hoosiers' health. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoveryparkdistrict.com.
Hoosier lawmakers have targeted a long list of health woes this session. Infant mortality, underage smoking and vaping, soaring insulin costs, easily detectable but often overlooked childhood afflictions, unexpected charges from out-of-network providers, and what at least one national study found to be some of the highest hospital costs in the country. Here to talk about those issues and more are Democratic Senator Jean Brough of Indianapolis, Assistant Minority Floor Leader and Ranking Minority Member of the Senate Health and Provider Services Committee. Democratic Representative Vanessa Summers of Indianapolis, the ranking minority member of the House Family, Children, and Human Affairs Committee, and away from the State House, coordinator of the National Diabetes Prevention Program at the Indiana Minority Health Coalition. Brian Tabor, president of the Indiana Hospital Association, which represents about 170 hospitals across the state. And Andrew Berger, senior vice president of governmental affairs for the Indiana Manufacturers Association, which has about 1,100 members statewide. Thank you all for being here. We won't talk coronavirus unless we run out of everything else. We got so much on the docket anyway that's happening this session. Let me start with you, Andrew. The first week of the session, Manufacturers Association came out with a study of what was on the minds of Hoosiers.
Yes.
And if I recall correctly, basically, you get right down to it, the number one issue for Hoosiers was healthcare costs. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. So you typically get jobs in the economy is always near or at the top. And it still was in our survey as well. But rising healthcare costs was cumulatively the number one issue that Hoosiers expected lawmakers to address in this session, and probably, I think everybody would agree, sessions to come. We asked a couple specific questions, too, one of which was on surprise or balance billing, which I know you mentioned in your opening, and 30% of the 1,000 registered voters we surveyed said that they had received an unexpected medical bill. Somebody in their family had in the last year. That's not people who had received medical care. That's people who got a bill of $1,000. And, you know, 30% might not seem like a big number when you think about it. That is really a high percentage of people getting bills they don't expect related to healthcare. That's an issue that needs to be addressed.
And your survey also sought to assign blame.
So we specifically asked about the RAND study, which showed Indiana's having some of the highest hospital prices in the country. And the top two reasons, and we asked, you know, was it some of the lower answered ones were legal costs like medical malpractice,
Frivolous lawsuits.
That's right. I mean, their employer too, because overwhelmingly most people in the state receive their health insurance from their employer. But the two highest, the number one was higher hospital costs and overcharging by physicians and hospitals, and then insurance companies was number two. So I think everybody would agree that there's probably a ton of reasons why we have higher prices than other states. But at least from the survey results, it's the hospital.
But they were high, particularly in the southwestern part of the state. There was that weird where it just went off the charts in terms of animosity.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of questions about market share and consolidations in the health market. I think maybe that's part of the reason why that might be higher, but we didn't drill that deep.
Brian Tabor, I bet you have a thought or two on this topic. Since at least a fair number of people in the survey, again, which was released the first week of the session by the Manufacturers Association, pointed a finger, rightly or wrongly, toward your constituents.
Pointing fingers is, I think, definitely something we have to kind of pull back on a little bit, because these things are very complex. And I think actually the poll that the manufacturer has done reveals some of that complexity. And I think it also reveals that even The respondents understand that complexity. But, you know, first of all, I'm not surprised that healthcare is number one. Healthcare costs too much. We've got to do something to bend the cost curve, and we have to do that together. It's got to be collaborative, and it has to be across the board. Many other polls, national polls, indicate that, for example, drug prices are the number one issue of voters. I know that was not included in the study, the poll that the manufacturers did, that didn't ask that question. I think if that question were there, you may have had some different results. And I think, you know, specifically to the question that Andrew was talking about, I believe only about a third of the respondents to that question really put the blame directly at hospitals or physicians. The vast majority of respondents, I think, recognize that there's a myriad of reasons that we have higher health care costs than we should in this country. And, you know, that was government interference and regulation. We have too many uninsured. I think that was one of the questions, and that's absolutely true. We need to work in Indiana on lowering the rate of the uninsured. So it's very complex.
And if you added all those others up, right, the number one answer, if this were Family Feud, would in fact be hospitals and physicians. But
yeah,
you're right, if you take everything else.
About a third,
And also, you've talked about behaviors. Hoosiers are not known necessarily for being, I'll exclude myself here, but, you know, we tend to have larger midsections, and our consumption we're not always poster boy for you've been looking at my diet again.
there's a lot we can do in Indiana. The Hospital Association, we commissioned a study from the Lewin Group, a nationally known firm, and we asked them the question, could you tell us what the savings would be for our state generally, but also the savings for businesses, if we were to just reach the national average when it comes to the rate of diabetes, the rate of tobacco use, and obesity. And they came back looking across the country at huge amounts of data and said, we could save a minimum of $3 billion just by reaching the national average. So not solving those issues completely. And a billion of that was just in lower premiums for employers. So I think that shows us that kind of working in a holistic fashion on all of these things, we need to work on transparency. We need to work on new models of care that lower cost, and hospitals are very engaged in that. But addressing our public health is going to pay dividends and reduce costs for everybody.
Vanessa Summers, you work in the healthcare industry when you're not down at the State House, so I'm guessing you have a thought or two about this. What do you think the problem is? Is it greedy hospitals? Is it greedy doctors? Is it out-of-shape patients?
All of that.
All of the above. Yeah,
I think it's all of the above.
There she gave you the answer, all of the above. See,
I agree that I think that it's all the above. We have to become a healthier Indiana. I work at the Indiana Minority Health Coalition, and I do a national diabetes prevention program. And we know that there are at least 86 million pre-diabetics that don't know. So that's 9 out of 10 people could be pre-diabetic, and they don't know it. So we've got to get more. We've got to be more aware of our health issues and our life, the length of life that, you know, how are we shortening our life by not having good health?
And would you weigh in as well? What's the problem in your estimation, Senator?
Well, I think it's as Brian indicated, it's very complex. And Indiana needs to focus on all of those factors. I didn't realize that that the Indiana Manufacturers Association had done that survey. That might then explain why this session we spent so much time on surprise billing, and we were successful in sending some bills out of the Senate over to the House that addressed that. But we overall really did nothing to address health care or how to make folks healthier. None of these bills that we've passed out of the Senate over to the House really address that. We did try to, Senator Melton had a bill that tried to address the cost of insulin, putting a cap on insulin and requiring insurance companies to cover the cost of the EpiPen. But overall, we really have not done anything. This session to me has been all about healthcare transparency.
And let's talk about that, because that is one of the ways that people have tried to combat the healthcare costs. And I do think one bill, not out of the Senate but out of the House, may still have some relief, perhaps for insulin.
Really? Okay.
I think.
Right, I'm well, not...
Don't hold me to that. I'm not a bill tracking
Robin, service here. But. Representative Robin Shackelford also had an insulin cap bill, but it did not make.
Well, and we also have legislation that would make it over the counter. I think Indiana, right. And I was surprised to learn this, is the only state in the country where its prescription is required.
You just said that, and I had no idea that we were
and
the
we
only
did address
state.
That in the Senate.
Right,
we did send a bill that said that you do not, no longer will require a prescription in order to get insulin, that in emergency situations you need to be able to access it, and over the counter is the best way to do that. But we require a prescription, so it was prohibitive. So we did try to address that. Now I think we are sending that bill over to the House.
Right. I think that is the case. Well, let's look at some of these measures that, again, are designed at curbing these health care costs. Again, a lot of it does focus on transparency, arming the consumer, the patient, with information. Now, the bills, there are various versions of databases and clearinghouses for information, some of which, of course, would have a lot of detailed information if you can almost down to the price shopping as if you were buying tires or something. This now, in all likelihood, what we're going to end up here with the all-payers claims database is not that. This is just looking, if I'm not mistaken, at what the average knee replacement is in, say, Northeast Indiana. Is that enough of a Andrew Berger? Is that enough?
The answer is no. I mean, there's a lot of questions, I think, about the effectiveness of this data and changing people's behavior. But even under the absolute best circumstances, any of these databases, it's going to take years to change the way people consume healthcare in this state and in this country. I mean, ultimately, most of the negotiations that really will occur are between businesses and their insurers and providers. And, you know, that's a contract that clearly has led to some higher prices for a ton of reasons. So we're supportive of, you know, added transparency around the prices around the state. But primarily, at least in the next couple of years, that should help employers be able to negotiate better. I mean, that's our goal.
A step, but not nearly far enough. Brian Tabor, you've said, though, that consumers basically, this is all they want, right? That basically looking at what the end user actually pays once the settlement is done with by the insurance companies and so forth.
I'm very optimistic about the promise of these claims databases. I think there's a reason why well over 20 states are moving in this direction. It was part of legislation at the federal level, bipartisan legislation to either create a national version of this, and more recently the focus was on giving states grants to develop these databases, because I think they hold tremendous promise. So the value is they can serve a number of different customers, essentially. There's information for businesses where you could look at the average commercial price for different hospitals or by region. For patients, what they really want is what's my out-of-pocket costs and how much am I going to pay? What's my copay, my coinsurance? Where am I in my deductible? And I think we could create something. Indiana has a long tradition of being a leader in health information technology. I think we've got some great resources in the state. You've worked a lot on that. And I think if we get the right partners at the table, we can create something that can help consumers, it can help businesses, it can help policymakers and researchers, and answer, I think, a lot of the questions that we have about healthcare.
Well, but if a little information is good, why wouldn't a lot more be better? You know, the Trump administration, about, 2 months ago, put forth rules that would require even greater transparency, where you even have hospitals and providers having to disclose negotiated prices and cash discounts and all of these things. So if a little bit of information is good, why not? And that's something I should say you and your brethren across the country have threatened to fight in court. And
yes, the federal groups are litigating that.
Right.
And
right.
I think what you see there is the federal rule would have actually required and does require, if it goes into effect, the privately negotiated rates by insurer with hospitals. And I think you have not only concerns from the provider community, but groups like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce have concerns about that, the insurers themselves. If you want to have a functioning free market healthcare system, then you do need to have networks. You've got to have negotiations. And I think there's a fear, in fact, even some folks involved with kind of antitrust in that area of study feel that posting those exact prices will not lower costs. It actually could lead to increases.
So you know what your competitor theoretically is doing.
So
you agree that's
I mean, there's a lot of problems with that.
I think there's a middle ground where you can give benchmarks that give consumers and businesses businesses something to shoot at when they're negotiating. And I think that's really what most folks are after.
So we have the transparency, maybe not as extensive as some people would like, but with this database in all likelihood at the state level. Also, a good faith estimate if patients request it within 5 days, I think, of a procedure, mm-hmm. hospitals and providers would be obliged to offer this up. And so these are some of the issues, and also the surprise billing, as it's called, for out of state. This would there are various mechanisms that were put forward about how to deal with that, but basically it shields the legislation shields consumers, Hoosier consumers, from these surprise.
Always, and we need.
Is that, is this enough? Is it not enough? Is it?
You know, we can always go further, and we can always look into the things that are happening in hospitals. Not only hospitals, I have to bring up that I think ambulance services are extremely expensive. So it's the gamut of the whole healthcare issue. It costs a lot to be sick.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And oh yeah. Are we so
it's a lot.
Direction,
it's
would you say? I mean,
transparency is always good. Anytime we can offer transparency on a complex issue such as healthcare, I think that's good. But in order for us to really address this issue, it seems to me we have to have all the stakeholders at the table. We have to have the insurance companies. They play a huge role in this in their pricing. And the hospitals themselves. You know, we need to make sure that our hospitals are equipped with the appropriate kind of equipment that they need in order to effectively provide health care. That costs money. We need to understand what all of those costs are. And then the individuals are the role we play in terms of our repeat visits back to hospitals, going to emergency room, use of emergency services. So it's a very complex issue. And so, yes, we're starting to attack certain parts of it. We're starting to attack the consumer side of it. Is this enough? No. Because, again, we still don't look at the cost of emergency services. You know, we do a good faith effort for 5 days in advance of any procedure. But what about those procedures that you don't have 5 days in order to?
A lot of people don't know when 5 days are going to be
at
the emergency
room. Well, that's why we need a surprise billing legislation. Yeah. Because if you go into what you think is an in-network hospital, but you receive service from somebody that's out of network, and then they bill you the balance of the charge, I mean, you had no choice as a consumer. And I think that's what really upsets people around the state.
And it seems to me that we need to take the consumer out of that,
exactly.
Out of that, and put the that should be between the hospital and the insurance provider. The consumer mm-hmm. should not be in the middle of that matrix, because it isn't
their fault.
But the issue is that the out-of-network provider has no arrangement with the insurer. I mean, that's why they sent the bill to the patient.
Exactly.
And that's where the confusion arises.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it some sort
yeah.
of settlement that's a set fee, or is there arbitration involved?
Yeah. And I think this is something we absolutely support. And really, ultimately, that dispute is between the physicians, independent physicians, or sometimes laboratories that provide services in the hospital. Mm-hmm. It's rarely with the hospital itself that there's a surprise bill from the hospital. But the way that our medical system works, that many hospitals rely on independent physician partners. And sometimes they're private businesses, they're negotiating with insurers. And if they're not getting what they feel is a fair rate, they may go out of network and that could expose, as Andrew said, someone who's gone in for a procedure, whether it's a scheduled procedure or an emergency service. If that emergency room doctor is out of network with that person's insurer, they might get a bill, the surprise bill. And we need to take the patient out of the middle of that. And I think that a number of states have figured out a way to do this. In Indiana, we can't probably legislate that for the entire insurance market, but we can do what we can, and then hopefully the federal government will renew their talks about a bipartisan way to solve this broadly, and the patient won't see that surprise bill. What we have to figure out, as you said, is how those independent physicians then can get reimbursed and deal with insurance. But that needs to happen away from the patient. And I think we can get there.
Well, we have so much to talk about. I was going to ask you about the whole debate over nonprofit status of hospitals, but you're off the hook. The bell, you're saved by the bell, only because I do want to get to the Your filibuster worked magically there.
It wasn't intentional.
Not intentional, no. But that is an issue that will certainly come up in the future. Vaping, tobacco. Big was on the governor's agenda. It was on the majority caucus agenda. Happy with where that is. Enhanced penalties for people who distribute to these to underage individuals. There's also, I believe, a new provision for vitamin E acetate, which has been linked to some of the more serious lung problems.
We're moving in the right direction. I think when vaping came on the scene, we are still behind the eight ball on knowing what's good and what's not and how we should regulate it. I still think that we're in the infant stages of figuring it out about vaping. Yeah. And as far as the tobacco, the federal government took us out of that by raising it to 21.
Well, they did, but the penalties, of course, are left to the state and so forth. Now, a lot of people say, oh, it's great to penalize it, but unless you really, the best way to deal this is enforcement. And if you want to more broadly deal with tobacco as a health issue, Tax.
And I'm in favor of that because I think cost is a deterrent. Now, I do like what we're doing in terms of the coinciding with the federal government, raising the age to 21, and just making it unattractive for young people to have tobacco in their midst, because I think, if we can get to the point where young people don't see this as a natural transition for them to go from, you know, being a kid to smoking a cigarette and so on, that we can maybe stave some of the long-term consequences of having tobacco with children. The long-term cost of that, just how unhealthy they are overall for employers, getting folks who can come to work and not have all these costs associated with their health care. But I do think we're moving in the right direction, but I would like to see us raise the tax.
And I think
I'm kind of opposite of Senator, because the tobacco prices affect my communities more than it does anyone. So if we raise the tax, that's not a deterrent. We found out that the price of cigarettes and the tax is not a deterrent for people smoking. Wow. So we
sets the stage for next year, budget
right.
year. Before I move on to another topic here, as I try to race through, one of the biggest coalitions I've seen come down the pike in a long time was about raising taxes. Yeah. I think both of your organizations were supportive in the past. Were they not? I believe
the Alliance for Healthier Indiana.
You're disavowing the
Alliance for Healthier Indiana was a huge effort. The Hospital Association, Indiana Chamber of Commerce, the State Medical Association, other partners, Anthem, to really make a strong push for doing that. And Representative Summers, we have to be conscious of that. We have to be mindful. But we do absolutely support raising the tax. I hope we set the stage. We're setting the stage for that next year in the budget year. But it's important that what we do with those dollars. And if we reinvest them in the right way, into public health.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Then we're doing it the right way.
We need to get off of those cigarettes, too.
Everything we've talked about, for the most part, in terms of hospital cost transparency and vaping and tobacco usage, have been part of the governor's agenda. And they've all seemed to, as you would expect, since his party controls, supermajorities in both chambers, seem to be heading toward passage. One that sort of hit the skids this week, perhaps, is the gutting of a Senate bill that would make certain employers of at least 15 employees provide some provisions or accommodations for pregnant women or new moms. Yeah. You were largely responsible for that gutting.
Yes, Andrew.
Talk about that.
Andrew.
You should have filibustered longer than before.
Now
I
can put a
this is a complex issue.
We've stipulated everything we're talking about.
And one where, our members, and I think most employers, not just manufacturers, provide these accommodations because they need to recruit and retain qualified workers, and that increasingly includes a lot of pregnant women or women who could become pregnant. What that bill did was create a legal process that had a lot of flaws, some significant ones that would have really impacted businesses, particularly smaller businesses.
And
so the whole enforcement mechanism was controversial, to say the least. I think the Senate was wise to slow down and study this because, I learned that the state is now revamping all their data collection around this issue. So that's one reason why I think we probably need to study it.
Well, I think we can stipulate, again, It's complex. Everything we've talked about here. But I'm glad we'll get security for you on the way out now that she knows who you were behind that.
Now that I know it was the governor supported this. FSSA supported this. Indiana State Department of Health. You can lobby them afterwards.
I'm getting a signal. We're out of time, unfortunately. Again, my guests have been Democratic Senator Gene Breaux of Indianapolis, Democratic Representative Vanessa Summers of Indianapolis, Brian Tabor of the Indiana Hospital Association, and Andrew Berger of the Indiana Manufacturers Association. Thank you all. The country is moving toward renewable energy sources, but some Indiana legislators think coal is not dead yet. On the next, Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hannah News Service. So Brian Tabor was saved by the bell when we were talking about nonprofit, but there was a Ball State Center for Business and Economic Research study that said part of the problem with health care costs is the way that Indiana relies so heavily on not-for-profit hospitals that choose the nomenclature, but they make a lot of money. Is that an issue?
And Dr. Hicks from Ball State also talked about hospital monopolies. And let me tell you, John, in this impeachment debate over the last couple of weeks, we've heard a whole lot about, you know, when Nixon realized he lost Peoria, he had lost everything. And I think in the Senate, you look at Travis Holman, a guy who's been a strong defender of the status quo, and he is considerably upset about what the nonprofit hospitals have done in terms of hoarding their profits from nonprofit hospitals, the billions of
that's
dollars.
That's revenue above expense, right? Or I think that's the euphemism.
Like, that nonprofit accounting. But he's upset that have made so much money and that they've invested it essentially outside the state of Indiana. And he's trying to work things so that they bring that money back to Indiana and are required to invest a percentage of that in Indiana operations and Indiana businesses and things like that, instead of letting, you know, the New York hedge funds essentially, you know, run these things and use them against Indiana to invest in other businesses outside of Indiana.
Halftime session, surprises.
Well, I think one thing is one of the bills that we were talking about this morning, that the panel was talking about, the pregnancy accommodation bill. The governor did not basically do his homework in terms of working with the stakeholders before to make sure that he had them all on board. And he also did not do enough work lobbying, in particular, the female members of the Senate Majority Caucus, who, with perhaps one exception, were all off board on this particular bill and really railed against it both in caucus and in the case of Liz Brown in particular on the floor. The governor also came up a little bit short in the first half on his mobile handheld phone regulation bill. Again, he wasn't as personally involved as some thought that he ought to have been in order to get that through.
So he may not be able to check every box at the end of the session of everything he wanted. We shall see. Ed, thank you as always for your insight. Great, much appreciated. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can access live streaming coverage of the General Assembly on the Internet as well. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit wfyi.org for more State House news. Until next week, take care.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoverypark district.com.